From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. And also, catch us anywhere you get your favorite podcast. Just search the Rob O'Donnell Show. And those smart speakers, just ask those little suckers to play WILK News Radio. It is 4:11, 84 degrees on this Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. Wednesday, we're on the downslope. The weekend is on the horizon. Pretty soon we will be there. And yeah, you know, they're calling for maybe a thunderstorm later today and maybe some drizzle a little bit tomorrow. Not crazy, but it looks like the weekend is shaping up nice. So stay tuned for when we have the weather shortly. So we had this GOP primary, the Senate runoff, where Ken Paxton, the attorney general for Texas, had swamped long-term Senator John Cornyn in the Texas GOP Senate runoff primary. And pretty much everyone is saying it's because of Trump's endorsement. And Trump is 100% for all his endorsements right now. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton decisively won Tuesday's primary runoff election in the Lone Star State, knocking off incumbent Senator John Cornyn, exactly 1 week after securing President Trump's pivotal endorsement. Now, Paxton's landslide victory is the third closely watched results in 10 days that demonstrates Trump's unrivaled influence over the Republican Party. Following the defeats of Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana and Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky, Cornyn, a Republican of Texas, topped Paxton by 2.5 percentage points in the March 3rd primary, but Trump opted not to weigh in on that race. Neither candidate reached the 50% benchmark needed to secure the nomination. With Trump's endorsement in hand, Paxton trounced Cornyn in the runoff, winning by 27-point margin, 63.8% to 36.2%. Paxton called Trump's seal of approval the most powerful force in politics after he locked up the GOP Senate nomination. Now, he still has the general election, and it's going to be a highly watched race. It's going to be a highly funded race, so we'll see what happens there. With everyone in Washington told him to abandon me and abandon the people of Texas, he didn't, Paxton said of Trump. Instead, he gave his complete and total endorsement. I'm honored to have his support, and I look forward to working with him in the Senate to deliver for Texas. Now, Paxton, 63, will take on Democrat State Representative James Tallarico in November 3rd general election, a race which will go a long way to determining whether Republicans can maintain control of the upper chamber. Now, Tallarico, 37, defeated Representative Jasmine Crockett of Texas in a March primary to secure the Democrat nomination. In the most recent poll taken by Texas Southern University at YouGov, and released on May 18th, showed Paxton and Tallarico a dead heat, each with 45% support. Texans have not elected a Democrat to the Senate since 1988, when Lloyd Bentsen won a fourth term. My opponent is the most extreme radical of the Democrats have ever nominated, Paxton said in his victory speech. James Tallarico is a threat to everything we hold dear here in the country, he added. Cornyn, 74, will depart the Senate having failed his bid to win a fifth term, but I will give John Cornyn credit. At his concession speech, he did say that he will support the nominee in the general election and continue to fight for Texas, which was good. It was good to see that kind of conceding speech. The incumbent said polled slightly better against Tallarico than Paxton in the GOP establishment figures, including Senate Majority Leader John Thune, National Republican Senatorial Committee. And scores Cornyn colleagues a big had begged Trump to make the safe choice. Cornyn had backed calls to weaken the filibuster and champion the Safe America Act, required proof of citizenship to vote, among other conservative wish list items during the scramble to get Trump's endorsement. On the eve of Trump's announcement, Cornyn acknowledged that he believed that ship has finally sailed when asked if he thought he would receive the president's backing. In his concession speech, Cornyn announced that he would support Paxton in his race against Tallarico despite the bruising primary campaign. I spent most of my time in the Senate building the Republican Party in Texas, and I've always supported the Republican ticket, and I intend to do the same this general election, Cornyn said. I've said throughout this race that I trust the voters of Texas, and they've made their decision, and I respect that, he added. My hope is that my party in power for generations. Paxton has touted his history of suing to defend conservative values, including more than 100 lawsuits against the Biden administration over open borders policies, government overreach, attacks on the Second Amendment, and far-left radical agenda. Now, there's a big... Again, this is going to be one of the main races that we watch nationwide happening there, similar to some of the congressional races here in Pennsylvania. But you have a lot of border towns that used to be majority Democrat who, because of the open borders free-for-all, have shifted their views and are either voting independent or Republican. You also have Tallarico, who's a vegan, which there's nothing wrong with being a vegan, but if you're running for elected office in Texas, it may not be a thing. Now, there's a couple of radical stances that he has, and again, since he's not my senator, I really don't pay too much attention, but this defeat in the primary is something to monitor. Does the president have that kind of swing over voters? I mean, we've seen here in our area, we just saw during our primary, dismal turnout from Republicans. And again, there weren't a lot of contested races on the Republican primary ticket here in Pennsylvania. But does that transcend into the general election come November? It better not, or Republicans are in trouble. But I'm assuming that we will see visits from the president. I'm assuming he's already given his endorsement to many of the congressional candidates here, including Rob Bresnahan, including McKenzie and Scott Perry, who are all getting challenged in the general election. And again, these are going to be some of the most expensive congressional races we've seen to date. Now, I believe... Congressman Bresnahan, when he challenged the former Congressman Cartwright, was one of the most expensive congressional races in history. Do we beat that? I'm saying probably so. There's a lot of push between pushing candidates locally here, and Pennsylvania is no doubt going to be a formidable battleground starting now. You know, primaries are over. The general election is here. We're moving forward with what happens. But to see the sway that's happened, I mean, John Cornyn was up in the polls during the original primary election. And again, they have a 50% threshold you need to get to win the primary. They did not do that, which is why we had this runoff. But because of an endorsement from the president, it sways that many voters. I mean, that you cannot... You cannot discount those numbers. 68% when he was down in the original primary. It's just 63.8 to 36.2. And again, John Cornyn was up in the original by almost 3 points in the primary. Now in the runoff, because of this endorsement, he wins by a 27-point majority. That's incredible tout. And listen, like the president, don't like the president, agree with him, don't agree with him. There's been history here. We've seen in Trump's first term what happens when the obstructionists get in. When Democrats take control, there's nothing, no plan, and I've said this from the start, they have no plan, they have no message, they have no leader. And their only platform is, we're going to get Trump. Well, you know what? He's gone in 2.5 years anyway. So what are you getting? All you're going to do is stymie the economy. All you're going to do is stymie progress. All you're going to do is shout at the wind, hold impeachment trials, stand in front of news cameras, and get nothing done. I mean, they'll get what they can through executive order. The same thing happened to Joe Biden before they pushed him out and chose, coronated a candidate rather than picked one. Another big mistake that it doesn't appear that Democrats learn from. So it's going to be interesting. First, I'd say for Democrats, get yourself a message and a platform and then find a candidate. Looks like you're having a hard time doing that. They're recycling the old, same old, same old. If you look at the leaders of who may run. Now, of course, Josh Shapiro is in that discussion. Gavin Newsom. AOC has been, ironically, higher up there. Kamala Harris, who I would love to run again, so please do. But it's going to be interesting to see the dynamics of the next couple of months, the next 6 months. Yeah, it's going to get nasty. Yes, we're all going to get sick of mailers and commercials and bombarded with nonsense. But do your research and listen. Do you want to move forward and choose someone to get things done? That's your choice to make as a voter now, isn't it? Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So there was an explosion in a Western Pennsylvania dairy farm today. Four are reported injured in an explosion in a Dairy Farmers of America plant in Lawrence County, Pennsylvania. Wilmington Township, Pennsylvania. Four people were injured in an explosion at a Dairy Farmers of America plant in Wilmington Township, Lawrence County, on Wednesday morning. It happened around 10:10 this morning at a plant on Route 18. Investigating the circumstances of the incident, they are still working with appropriate local personnel and outside expert as we continue to investigate. Here it is. The DFA said that there was an electrical arc fire at the facility. One person was flown by helicopter to the hospital. Second was transported by ambulance, and two others were treated at the scene for what the DFA describes as minor injuries. So that's what we have now. I did see that both Senator John Fetterman has posted it on his social media, and the governor has said that he's in contact with the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau and emergency management and monitoring the situation as well. So out in Western PA, there was a dairy farm explosion caused by an electrical arc that sent four people to the hospital. Four people injured, two treated at the scene, one life flighted, and the other one sent by ambulance. It's 4:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels.
Honoring our heroes.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes and law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day, May 27th, throughout history and throughout the Commonwealth. And today we have four. Some of them right from here, from our area. And brought to you by Isabella Restaurant right here in Plains Township on Route 315. We appreciate their sponsorship of this segment each and every day. We're going to start with Patrolman Richard Gordon Janzowski, Avoca Borough Police Department. On this day in 1986, he was shot and killed while investigating a suspicious vehicle parked in the woods near Wilkes-Barre Scranton Airport. As he approached the vehicle, a man emerged from the woods. Patrolman Janzowski asked the man for identification. The man went to his car, produced a handgun, and began firing at the patrolman. He was struck once in the chest, but before collapsing, returned fire and wounded the suspect. The suspect then walked over to patrolman and shot him in the head. The suspect then committed suicide. He served with the Avoca Borough Police Department for 3 months. He was survived by his wife and mother. He's 23 years old. Police officer Donald Allen Oldfield, Philadelphia Police Department in 1982, suffered a fatal heart attack in the Northeast Detective Division shortly after making an arrest. We have Sheriff James Rufus Lauer, Northumberland County Sheriff's Office in Pennsylvania, on this day in 1959, was shot and killed in McCandless Township near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as he and a deputy transported a prisoner to the Western Penitentiary. During the drive near the intersection of Perry Highway and Pine Creek Road, the suspect was able to grab Sheriff's 38 caliber revolver. The sheriff then jumped into the back seat in an attempt to regain control of the weapon and subdue the prisoner. During the struggle, the suspect shot the sheriff in the abdomen. Deputy was able to stop the vehicle and attempt to aid Sheriff Lauer, but was chased away from the scene by the suspect. The suspect fled on foot, but turned himself in 12 hours later during a massive manhunt. And then we have Patrolman Alvin Earl Brandt, Scranton Police Department, Pennsylvania, 1931. Patrolman Alvin Brandt succumbed to injuries sustained a week earlier when he was struck by a vehicle while directing traffic around a construction site. Patrolman Brandt was a U.S. Navy veteran of World War I, was survived by his wife and two children. Again, this was 1931. And those are our four heroes that we honor on this day. Again, two of them being from right in our area, here in Northeast Pennsylvania, our listening area anyway. And again, we thank our friends over at Isabella Restaurant, Plains Township, Route 315 right here. A great place to go for a meal, great place to go for an evening dinner out with your loved one, great place for a business meeting or meal. They also have a conference room or a catering area that is great to have an event at. So please go give it a visit and support those who support us. It's coming up on 440 here on WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. We have the AccuWeather forecast tonight. A thunderstorm around this evening. Going to be hit or miss, a low about 55. Tomorrow, not as warm with lower humidity. Partial sunshine, breezy in the afternoon, a high of 71, a low of 48. Friday, partial sunny and nice, a high of 77, low 51. Saturday, mostly cloudy, breezy, not as warm, a high of 69, a low of 43. And Sunday, pleasant with more sunshine than clouds, a high of 72, a low of 48. It's currently 84 degrees here at 440 at your official weather station, WILK.
Today, in history.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History. Because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been?
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's see what we have. On this day, May 27th, 1937, the Golden Gate Bridge opened to pedestrians for the first time before officially opened to vehicular traffic. The next day, more than 200,000 people reportedly walked across it during the celebration. Anyone who's ever seen the Golden Gate Bridge, you could see that, it's on a crest. You know, the middle of the span of the bridge is obviously higher than the lower ends. That must be something to walk. It's interesting because you never really realize that, especially the tunnels in like New York City. I've done tunnels to towers, and going through the tunnel, how much of a decline and then incline it is coming out of that tunnel until you actually walk it, which I highly recommend, at least doing it once. But it's not really noticeable until you're actually walking it. In the car, you really don't pick up on it. In 1930, the Chrysler Building officially opened in Manhattan, briefly became the tallest building in the world. In 1941, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt proclaimed an unlimited national emergency as World War II intensified in Europe. In 1942, Navy mess attendant Doris Miller became the first African-American awarded the Navy Cross for heroism during the attack on Pearl Harbor. If you've ever seen the movie Pearl Harbor, he was played by Cuba Gooding Jr. in that movie. I believe they're naming a ship after him as well. In 1999, Space Shuttle Discovery launched on the first shuttle mission to dock with the International Space Station. In 1972, President Richard Nixon and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed a major nuclear arms reduction agreement during the Cold War. In 1896, one of the deadliest tornadoes in American history struck St. Louis and East Street, St. Louis, and East St. Louis, killing more than 250 people. In 1907, environmental pioneer Rachel Carson was born in Springdale. Her book, Silent Spring, helped launch the modern environmental movement. 1813, former President Thomas Jefferson wrote the famous reflective letter to John Adams following the death of Dr. Benjamin Rush. Today is also associated with the history of Memorial Day, which occasionally falls on May 27th, depending on the calendar year. The holiday grew out of post-Civil War Decoration Day observances honoring fallen soldiers. Pennsylvania-specific history on this day, 1907, conservationist Rachel Carson was born in Springdale, near Pittsburgh. Her work directly influenced the creation of modern environmental regulations and eventually the EPA. In 1889, the oil company that eventually became Pennzoil was founded in Pennsylvania as South Penn Oil Company, tying May 27th to the state's enormous role in the rise of American petroleum industry. May 27th, 1778, during the Revolutionary War, troops under General Marquis de Lafayette were active in southern Pennsylvania preparing for the British movements out of Philadelphia as the British occupation neared its end. On May 27th, 1937, newspapers across Pennsylvania heavily covered the opening of the Golden Gate Bridge because Pennsylvania steel mills supplied massive quantities of steel used in major American infrastructure projects of that era, including suspension bridges nationwide. On May 27th, 1962, the infamous Central Mine Fire was ignited after a landfill burn spread into the underground coal system. Fire still burns today beneath parts of the town and became one of the most famous mining disasters in Pennsylvania history. And that's it for today in history, but I've been having some text messages back and forths with about inflation rates. So I pulled up some historical figures for inflation rates. And, the annual average inflation rate now in 2021, and I understand, you know, we have COVID, there was change of administrations and such. If you look at 2021, the average annual inflation rate was 4.7. If you look at 2022, the average annual inflation rate was 8%. If you look at 2023, the average annual inflation rate was 4.1. If you look at 2024, the average annual inflation rate was 2.9. 2025, the average annual inflation rate was 2.6. And so far in 2026, and let me get the specific number for you here in a second, as I work it out, because it did not give me the annual. January was 2.4. February was 2.4. March was 3.3. April was 3.8. So the average annual inflation rate so far this year is 2.9. So, again, 2.9 year-to-date in 2026, 2.6 in 2025, 2.9 in 2024, 4.1 in 2023, and 8.0 in 2022, 4.7 in 2021. Now, that's as far as I went back, 2021. You can easily do those numbers and go back as far as you'd like. The inflation rate for 2026 and 2025 was the best in the past 5 years. 2026, yes, in April it spiked. You have the conflict with Iran, a big part of that. Again, January 2.4, February 2.4, which rivaled pretty much all of 2025. We didn't see we saw a 2.4 once in 2024, and we didn't see it at all in 2023. So again, once this conflict resolution is brought, you're going to see inflation rates come down, but it's still 2.9 year to date for 2026. Not bad inflation rate. You know, anything under 3% is tolerable. 2% is the ideal. So there's the inflation rates for those who are texting and complaining about inflation and how it's breaking them all of a sudden. Well, when you look at the numbers, I don't know how it's breaking you, because it's actually pretty good. Could it get worse? Sure, it could. Could something happen tomorrow? Sure, it could. You know, I'm sure if we start kinetic strikes on Iran again, which is very likely, by the way, you're going to see, because it's going to take time now, where just on the word of there may be a deal, you know, price dropped down to the 80s a barrel today for the first time in weeks. So a volatile situation, but again, a price well paid for Iran without nuclear material. It's 4:52 here at WILK. Let me tell you about what's not controversial. My friends over at Monk Heating and Air Conditioning. Listen, I had three criterias for a company to put in one of those ductless split air systems. I want a local company, a family-run company, and a company with top-of-the-line equipment. They checked all those boxes. The Mitsubishi electric heat pump system is the gold standard in these split air ductless systems. Matter of fact, this weekend, you know, it wasn't hot, it wasn't warm, it was just wet. So it was damp. So we put the dehumidification on, and it made the room real comfortable, just like that. They are family run. They've been in business and serving all of Northeast Pennsylvania for over decades. So check them out at monkhvac.com. Again, they are Mitsubishi Diamond Elite contractors, so you can be sure that that Mitsubishi electric heat pump system is installed right to its specifications. They're also Trane Premier Comfort Specialists. Trane as in T-R-A-N-E, the systems. So if a central system is more your liking, they can do that for you just well. They got 24/7 service, 365 day a year, cool club maintenance plan, something that you should really look into. They look after all my systems, even the ones they did not install, to make sure the little things don't become big things, because they are HVAC experts. They know what they're looking at. Water heaters same day if you need a replacement. And that family value. The Monk name's on everything they do, so they stand behind it because their family's name is behind it. So check them out at monkhvac.com. That's monkhvac.com, and see what they can do for your heating and air conditioning needs. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So NASA unveils a $1 billion moon base push amid cost questions. And again, this is a plan. It's probably on the horizon somewhere, but how far on the horizon? NASA unveiled nearly $1 billion in new moon base contracts Tuesday as its top official called for less reliance on taxpayer funding and a faster path to putting astronauts on Mars. NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman said Tuesday that the American space program shouldn't be perpetually funded by taxpayers. I guess we're all for that. Even as the agency announced nearly $1 billion in a new moon base contracts as part of NASA's efforts to establish the first permanent human outpost beyond Earth and prepare for crewed missions to Mars. The agency awarded contracts to Blue Origin, Astrolab, Lunar Outpost, and Firefly for lunar landers, rovers, and drones. Blue Origin was selected to deliver lunar terrain vehicles to the surface under a contract valued at $188 million, with an option period worth an additional $280.4 million based on performance. Astrolab received $219 million contract and Lunar Outpost a $220 million contract to build the rovers themselves, according to NASA official at the briefing. Firefly was selected to deploy NASA's Moonfall hopping drones designed to scout landing sites, search for water ice, and establish communication networks around the moon base. though NASA did not disclose the contract value. NASA announced the three initial moon base missions, with a fourth wave of awards expected in the coming months. Moon Base 1, slated for launch no earlier than fall of 2026, will use the Blue Origin's Blue Moon Mark 1 Endurance lander to deliver payloads to the lunar's South Pole. Moon Base 2, planned for later in 2026, will deliver more than 1,100 pounds of cargo, including a rover to mature lunar terrain vehicle operations. Moon Base 3, also planned for 2026, will fly an Intuitive Machines Nova C Trinity lander carrying scientific instruments and payloads from the European Space Agency and the Korean Astronomy and Space Science Institute. Well, it looks like we're going to the moon. The moon will be unfolding in three phases, with the first running through 2029 and focused on cargo delivery and lunar surface technology testing, followed by, well, you guessed it, humans. So we'll see where this goes. I'm actually excited about it. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.